Scene 12, Michael Strong, 3 p.m. I couldn't go home. I had to stay in the hotel. I had to stay at the scene of the crime until I got over at least some of my confusion. He was killed. Nothing had happened to change my mind. The skies would fall open before Giles would have thrown his clothes about like that, and how would the killer have known that? I couldn't let it go. Damn it, I owed it to Giles to straighten it out. It wasn't that we had a David and Jonathan friendship, or that I even liked him very much. It's that I felt guilty. I had been asked to do a little errand for him, and I had forgotten. He had asked me one last favor, and I had flubbed it. How could I tell that my failure to deliver the package had not contributed to his murder? I had to make it up to him. I wandered about aimlessly for a while, and then at 3 p.m. found myself in the bar. In one of the bars, that is. There are a number of them in the hotel, and as a non-drinking man, none of them meant anything to me. This was one of the times, though, that I wished I were a drinking man, if only to have something to do and soften the edges of the hard lump inside me. At that time of day, the bar wasn't full. I took a corner table, and when the pretty waitress approached in a little frilly crotch-high skirt, I mumbled the only combination of sounds that I can produce that seem appropriate to the surroundings. "Virgin Mary, straight up," I said. I'm not sure what straight up means. I think it means without ice, because if I ever say just Virgin Mary, the waiter invariably says, "On the rocks, sir," and I know that means ice. It did occur to me that Shirley Jennifer was three floors up, signing something or other in one of the booths. I could go up there and wait for her with a sick and concerned face, and she would ask me what's up, and I would tell her, and she would get very motherly and take me home, and I couldn't. By God, I couldn't. I can't explain it easily, but if I hadn't met her, I would have been off the hook. I would have gotten that damned package and delivered it last night. I would not have delivered it at midday today. I would not have discovered the body. I would not be groveling in the humiliation of having failed a friend's last request, and maybe, in that way, having brought on the catastrophe. Had I delivered the package last night, Giles could have broken his neck or had it broken for him, and it would have been none of my affair. I could have felt the same perfunctory sorrow that all the rest of the thousands at the convention would feel. I didn't have to sit there hopelessly involved if it weren't for Shirley. Of course, I could see the flagstones which had been laid. If that woman hadn't decided to wear a dress with holes in it, if I hadn't been made to feel like a fool when I arrived less than 24 hours ago, if everyone hadn't combined to fan my anger and turn it against Giles, then I would never have yelled like a madman at him, humiliated him utterly, God, my last conversation with him, and forced him to leave the hotel so that he laid the errand on me in the first place. But put it all together, and I would still have done my bit if I hadn't met Shirley. But because I had met her, just when I did, I was sitting in the bar, closer to wanting to be drunk than ever in my life and not knowing how to do it. It wasn't Shirley's fault, she didn't know, but I couldn't see her without thinking, so I made no attempt to see her. I had to sit there and work it out. If Giles was killed, who killed him? Giles had finished autographing at 11 a.m. He would have gotten to his room by, say, 11:15. I found him at 1:33 p.m. He was dead for some time, say, since 1 p.m. That means whoever had killed him had to have done it between 11:15 a.m. and 1 p.m. How many people at the convention could account for their time fully between those limits? Probably a great many, but that would leave a large number who couldn't. Who would have a motive? Lots of people would have the motive to do him a bad turn, say a nasty word about him, refuse a helping hand at crucial moments. Martin Walters was annoyed with him for standing him up in connection with a talk. Tom and Teresa Valier were sick over his apparent abandonment of them. Roseanne Bronstein perhaps felt spurned in a more intimate way. Even Henrietta might have been irritated with his lack of cooperation. As for Asimov, he was bound to be jealous of Giles' success. Why shouldn't a guy with 163 books turn a little green over someone shooting past him on his second book? And why should he harp on my jealousy if he were not feeling the bite himself? But not one of these motives was possibly deep enough for murder. Or was I wrong? Did I know all the ins and outs of emotions? Did I know exactly how deeply something Giles had done had cut into someone's heart? Did I know exactly how some small deed might fester in a particular type of personality? Was I aware of how unconnected factors might have contributed? Look at all the different things that had combined to reduce me to the kind of rage from which I usually do not suffer, and made me scream at Giles for what could have seemed on the face of it no reason at all. And who could get into Giles' locked room if he did not, like Giles or myself, have a key? Actually, anyone. If a writer is at a convention in some field allied to writing, he is particularly vulnerable. Anyone can knock on the door and, in response to who's there, say through the locked barrier, "I'm a fan, sir. Could you sign a book of yours that I have here?" Theoretically, the writer could answer, "Beat it, you punk, I'm busy." But I'd bet myself 100 to 1 any time that there isn't a writer, certainly not a young writer, who can resist the implied flattery. And how could it be done? It would have to be a blunt instrument at the base of the skull, something the supposed slam against the bathtub faucets could have caused. What was it? A karate chop? But then what would it take to drag Giles into the bathroom? Roseanne Bronstein might have been able to do it, but I'll bet Teresa Valliere couldn't. But might it not have been two people working together? And what of the heroine? I was convinced the heroine had been there and was heroine, but how on earth could I prove it? And if I could, what connection did it have with the murder? Some connection, I'm sure, but what? In whatever direction my mind turned, I came up with nothing. I could in no way limit the possibilities or work up a reasonable list of suspects. The matter needed investigation, but I lacked the talent and the facilities for that, and I didn't see how I could persuade the police to do it for me. And then I heard the sound of someone clearing his throat. I looked up, and it was Michael Strong, the security man, looking uneasy and unhappy. He said, "May I talk to you, Mr. Just?" I said dully, "Aren't you supposed to be on duty?" "Someone is covering. Just a few minutes, sir." "Well, then, sit down. If you're allowed to drink on duty, have one on me." "No, thanks," he said, and then for a while he just sat there. "Well," I said. "I'm glad I found you, sir," he said. "I thought you might be in one of the bars. It seemed natural." "I don't drink," I said, "but you found me, so 3 cheers for your reasoning powers. What can I do for you?" I want you to know," he said, "that I'm sorry for what happened." He kept rubbing his hands against his thin tan jacket as though to wipe off the perspiration. His rather comical face, or it would have been comical if I had been in the mood to smile, was twisted into a distress that did not make it less comical. I was pinching my upper lip, and I withdrew my hand long enough to give it a what-can-you-do wave, and said, "Do you think he was murdered?" "Me? No." "Did you tell the police?" "No, I told the police nothing. They wouldn't believe it." "You don't." "Just because the clothes were thrown around, that's not much." "And the heroin?" "There wasn't any." "No, not after you two came in. There was heroin before that. I'm not crazy. You or your boss or both of you got rid of it." He shook his head, then said, "Why would we?" "You wouldn't want murder, would you? Bad for the hotel. You wouldn't want a drug scandal, even worse for the hotel." Strong thought about it. His brows furrowed together, and he made a visible effort. He said, "Suppose there were drugs there. That works against murder." "Really?" "Sure. If Mr. DeVore were an addict, he might have been high, and then you can't argue what he would do or how he would handle his clothes. Maybe he might be very careful about them when he was normal, but he might throw them around when he was high. He might also be unsteady on his feet and fall in the bathtub, see? That's what probably happened if there really was heroin in the room." It was my turn to think. What Strong said didn't exactly sound stupid. Or really, how stupid could he be if he enjoyed crossover? That was not a stupid man's book. Could he be right? Was I stubbornly tying myself emotionally to the theory that Giles had been killed only in order to intensify my feeling of guilt over my failure in connection with the package? I said, "When's the autopsy?"
"Not before tomorrow. The medical examiner isn't even here yet. Probably won't get here till dinner time."
"Why the delay?"
"It's always that way. It takes time. There's lots of bodies in the city at any given time, and the ME has to see them in order."
I said, "I don't think Giles was a hophead. I don't think he was high. I think he would have taken care of his clothes neatly, and because they were not taken care of, he's not the one who put the clothes there. And the heroine had to have something to do with it. I won't let you talk me out of its being there."
If it were there, said Strong, and if Mr. DeVore did not take drugs, then the heroin could have nothing to do with him at all. It could be there from the previous occupant. It could have been there for weeks. The maids don't always do things so carefully as all that, you see what I mean? I saw what he meant. It seemed entirely unlikely, but it could be so. I knew even less about the whole mess than I thought I had known, and my thoughts shrank inward and built a wall of silence about me. Then Strong said, Mr. Just, if you don't mind, I'll have to be getting back soon. Could I explain something? Go ahead, I said. This is not just part of the job for me. I read fantasy. As I told you yesterday, I admired Mr. DeVore's book. I got his signature on my copy of Crossover this morning, not the ones they were giving away. I just want you to know my personal feelings. He brought out a dog-eared paperback edition of Crossover and passed it to me. I opened it to the title page, and there was Giles' signature all right, with Best Wishes above it and 26 May 75 under it. The Best Wishes looked faint, and the final S almost wasn't there, but the signature was considerably darker, as though Giles had put his heart into that. It's a phenomenon I've often noticed with writers. No matter what they write in addition to their signature, it's their own name into which they put their muscles and their heart. Strong said, Would you sign your name to it, too, and date it? It's not my book, I said. I know that, sir, but I've read two of your books and I've seen your movie. He didn't exactly move me. I'm not that amenable to flattery. And if I were, I was at an unamenable moment. It seemed quite clear to me that a signature by Giles, dated the day of his death, accompanied by a signature of the discoverer of the body, dated the same day, could make the book quite valuable. But then I thought, hell, we were neither of us Abe Lincoln. At best, our signatures would make the book worth $5 to some collector, and I had a notion that Strong wouldn't sell it. So let him have something that he valued greatly and that cost me nothing. I signed. No best wishes, which seemed inappropriate, just my name and the date under those Giles had written. Absently, I admired my signature, small, neat, clear, each letter perfectly formed, and to add character, the upper loop of the capital J, large and roundly triangular, so that the rest of the name seemed to be suspended from a J balloon. I handed it back. There you are. He put it into his jacket pocket and said, I just want to show you how I admire Mr. DeVore, and why I was hoping you wouldn't say anything about murder and drugs without any better evidence. It would make a terrible impression and could ruin his reputation. Even if everything showed it was an accident and he didn't take drugs, if something like your theory gets to the public, there'd always be people saying he died of an overdose, or that he was killed, and that's what he would be remembered for instead of his books. That wouldn't be right. Damn it, it wouldn't. I know, I said, and went back to pinching my upper lip. One way or another, he was making it very hard for me to insist on murder. Then I said, Hey, you had that book signed this morning? Yes, Mr. Just. Well, then, you were there. Didn't Mr. DeVore make a fuss while he was on the platform? What was that about? Fuss? Strong looked confused. I heard he made a fuss, I said. He shook his head slowly. Well, I don't know anything about that. I came early, and I was at the head of the line, third or fourth, maybe. Then I had to go back to my post outside the exhibit room. Maybe there was trouble after I left, I wouldn't know. It couldn't have amounted to much, or I would have heard about it, it seems to me. He got up and ducked his head as though to say goodbye, and then he said suddenly, Do you know Mrs. DeVore? I've met her once or twice, I said. I think she would like to see you. You mean she's here? You've seen her? We tried to call her at her home, but there was no answer, and we gave up. But then, at just about that time, she came in and tried to get Mr. DeVore on the house phone. Naturally, the operator asked her to identify herself, and... He spread out his hands. Where is she? I'm not sure. Last I heard, she was in public relations. She may not be there anymore. Where is that? It's on the sixth floor, 622. Only thing is, Mr. Just... And then he hesitated. Yes? I don't think it would be such a good idea to talk to her about your theories. Poor woman must be in a pretty bad way, left a widow so young. I said, Don't worry about it. I haven't told the police, and I won't tell her, okay? Okay. He grinned with relief. And Mr. Just, you keep up the good work. Your books, I mean. You should write more. I will, I said, if I manage not to slip in the bathroom. He looked a little shocked at the gallows humor and left.